Rodgers, who the only place he's going to take it to is the toilet bowl. And then you got Brett Favre, who will take it to the Super Bowl.
I do like me a triple butterburger with cheese. The works, you know, ketchup, mustard, pickles.
Could the package be really good? Yeah, I certainly would love that. But also, to say that, does this look like a rebuild? Probably.
If you think we're in a rebuild, then you got the wrong team.
QB1, man.
Come on, man.
Best QB in the league right now.
What's up, John Money?
He ran right in front of me. I'm like, huh?
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Janis.
And Janis does not stop it! Oh, please! What a cat! That's insane!
And you're listening to the Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers Podcast, the one Packers podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd, boys.
Hello, hello. Greetings, gentlemen.
And after a long delay, the season is unfortunately over. Packers losing 21-24. Again, sorry for the delay. You know, it was kind of a short week. I had to go to Mexico on Thursday of that week, and work was busy and stuff, and emotionally, I guess we were recovering. But, yeah, Packers lose. Kind of a heartbreaker. You know, it's after, like, that first week, you know, the first couple days, it's like, oh, I'm kind of sad. Not super sad, you know. It's just another kind of heartbreak playoff loss for the Packers, but especially after the Lions lost the way they did, I feel like I'm just, everything's fresh. It feels, I'm good now. I'm completely over it. But we did watch the game together, so I think we're going to briefly go over the game and shit. We'll obviously talk about the new defensive coordinator. We'll talk about, you know, the offseason, firing Darren. God, I've talked so much about Darren Rizzi.
Yeah.
That Chris Gizzy, the athletic trainer who got fired. I keep mix-matching the names of those two, but we'll talk about the offseason, preview that a bit, blah, blah, blah. Look at the draft. But yeah, so I don't know if no one wants to hear us talk about the game. We'll try to make it quick, but we're going to start there and then more, you know, recent events we'll talk about after that. So starting things off, hey, Packers lost. Wasn't fun. We watched the game together at Lynn Lake that Saturday night. And
what a zoo.
It was crazy. It was a zoo. So I got a beer before Todd, you got there. And it literally took me 40 minutes to get a beer. The place got so filled up. It's a brewery in uptown Minneapolis, where literally the line wrapped around the bar and went to the door, and it took me 40 minutes to get a beer. But outside of that, it was the most fun I think I've had watching a Packer game, like, at a bar, even though we ended up losing. Like, I go back to, and I was telling the guys in Mexico this, like, when they showed the replay of the Eric Wilson fumble recovery, that was, like, the loudest cheer of the night, I feel like. Where it's like, huh? Ah! We're just an incredible play that we're never going to get to really talk too much about in the future. I feel like it's going to be, like, the Jeff Janis Hail Mary, but we tried the Rumpelman shots too. I've talked about that in the past, how getting a round of Rumpelman shots caused the Dez didn't catch it, and the Jeff Janis Hail Mary too. Like, we took a round of Rumpelman shots on that drive and it ended up working. We tried it at halftime, did not work. But I don't know. What did you guys have as fun watching the game, at least until the last 6 minutes, as I did? Because I had a shit ton of fun.
I had a lot of fun. It was, you're right, when you walk in, it looked like a game of Snake, the line to get a beer. It was like when you've been playing Snake for like 30 minutes and you just have to like go around in circles until and hope they show up in the middle. It was like that. I had a lot of fun. The atmosphere was really good. There was like one guy in like a Baltimore Lamar Jackson jersey who was like chirping every time something. Well, it was like one time.
Yeah. He started like kinda some chant. I feel better about the Ravens losing now.
He started a chant. It was just him though, but it was he was the only one chanting. Mm-hmm. So, but no, it was a good atmosphere. It was impossible to get a beer, which was a little bit of a bummer. But other than that, they had like one bartender working and like one person washing dishes and gathering cups.
They had two bartenders and the one guy was pretty much just washing cups and getting glasses.
That was a little bit tough. But aside from that, great atmosphere. The fans around us were great. It was a lot of fun.
there's something to be said for watching a game in an environment like that, and especially a big game, right? A playoff game, win or go home. Just watching it with a room full of, I mean, we probably exceeded the fire code that
yes.
night.
Yeah,
we were that. Just that many Packers fans. And I mean, shoot, before the game when Michael Strahan picked Green Bay to win, like there was a huge roar that came up. It's like the game hasn't even started yet. And these guys are into the game. So that was amazing. But yeah, really disappointing that we couldn't come out with a win. But I mean, all in all, I think you have to call the season a success, right? Like, there's no way that anybody considers this season a failure.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. Like, leaving, it's like, God, I'm really pissed. But even with the way things went, and I would have felt pretty confident going into the game. But the thing I was thinking about, too, is, you know, we killed the Lions on Thanksgiving. But that was a short week. And I would think Ben Johnson would have come up with a pretty good game plan to go up against Joe Barry. And if we lose that game, the heartbreak would have been even worse than it was. Which, I mean, God, I think we said it then, like, going into the game, I was like, I think we'd I felt like we were going to win. I felt like we were going to win that game until the last 6 minutes after Andres missed that field. He missed the field goal. I look up at how much time's left, and I'm like, oh, fuck, we're going to lose this, aren't we? But, yeah, I don't know. It just still very, very optimistic with everything going on. Oh, God, I was going to add something else there, too. But I don't know. Todd, do you have anything else on?
I think just on the season, like, I'm trying to think of like a season prior where I felt more excited going into the offseason. Like, this was this season in general was just like a huge victory for the franchise and for the fans, where it's like we got our quarterback. Like, going into the season, there were Jordan Love stands, but like I don't think there was any evidence going into the season that like he was the guy. Like, none of us had any evidence that he was the guy.
It was the ten passes against the Eagles was like the most positive.
That was it.
And Tom Clemens sticking around with the big two things. Yeah,
it was garbage time too. So like, you don't know. Like, guys show up in preseason all the time and play great too. The fact that we got Jordan Love out of the season, we got to see what he can do, and there's so much left to improve on his game also, too. Like, just little things that you see him, like, every week, it's like, oh, yeah, like, he can create in this way, too, and he's hitting guys on that jet route that motions up, right? Like, stuff like that, too, that's, like, super exciting. So, biggest win, getting Jordan Love, these young Packers wide receivers and pass catchers, including the tight ends. I mean, this offense is ready to go, right? Like, this is going to be exciting.
And, oh, now I remember. Going into the game, I felt like if we played that game 10 times, we'd win 4 of them. After the game, I'm like, we'd win 6 of them. Like, I feel like we were the better team than the Niners in that matchup. And back to watching the game, too. Like, the last few years, and maybe it's just me becoming more cynical and the podcast, and, you know, it almost turns a little bit into kind of a job. Just because, you know, we talk about it after, and I got to remember things. I felt like a fan again, like at the game. Like, I was getting heated. I was jumping up and I was running around. And Todd, I was yelling at you. I'm like, Brock Purdy isn't good. He just isn't good. And it sucked at the end. You know, when Darnell Savage dropped that pick, I was at the bar finally, and I slammed my hat on the bar and looked like a crazy person. And of course, that play obviously.
And yelled at a Darnell Savage wearing fan.
I pointed at him and was like, you! And then he came up and dapped me up. So I was like, okay, I guess we can be friends. So I don't know. Billy?
The thing about a game like that is if we go in and we lose 27-10 or something, like, nobody feels that bad about it leaving. It's okay, they're the number one seed. We were playing with house money. We're on the road, whatever. Did the weather help keep us in the game? I think so.
Yes.
In all honesty, like, I think that's had a lot to do with Brock Purdy playing the way he did. But
small hands.
You know, we just, it only seems like we lose heartbreakers in the playoffs. You know, we either lose absolute heartbreakers or we get absolute boat raced like in the 16 NFC Championship. There is no middle ground where we just lose by 2 touchdowns and the other team is just better.
Yeah, like even the 2011 loss to the Giants, like, is hardly on the radar, even though we were 15-1 because we really didn't have much of a chance in that game once it started. But yeah, getting into the game here, we'll try to cruise through it as much as possible. Packers losing 21-24. I don't. It kind of felt like the Bears game to end the season almost, where I know it felt like we were moving the ball and in control, but the points just really weren't there. Jordan Love didn't have a great game, probably his worst game since what the Giants game maybe through the two picks. The one behind Tucker Kraft was bad where he tipped up and it got picked off. And once again, ending a game with a late throw over the middle to Christian Watson, who's in triple coverage. And Bill, I think you said this too. Like, Love is running out and he just throws it. I'm like, there's someone wide open. There's someone wide open. No, there was not anyone wide open. The season ended with that pass there. And it sucked because it's like, I think that was first or second down, and all we needed was a fucking field goal. It's like, God, Jordan, just a couple, just a little things here and there. I don't know what you're doing.
The frustrating thing for me, real quick, was the two interceptions came on, the first came on a throw that I haven't seen Jordan Love make since, I mean, the middle of the season.
Yeah.
And the last pick came on a throw, or a decision rather, that he hasn't made since the beginning of the season. Like, he was playing so well. He was so on the money, dialed in. And then when it matters the most, and again, the weather wasn't great, but to throw high and behind a guy like that coming over the middle is a bummer. And then just making that decision, and he said it immediately after, like, he can't make that throw. So
one of the mortal sins.
Immediately.
Yeah. And I think the vast majority of his picks this year have came when he's targeting Christian Watson, who, again, something else, he out-snapped Dontavian Wicks in the game. He had 55% of the snaps, and I get the speed and everything, and that kind of stretches the field, and it's a new element that the defense has to look for. But when you're rolling with the guys you had, I don't know why you're forcing a guy on the field like that. Now, Wicks didn't end up with any receptions, but
they had just as many targets, though.
Yeah. And at least Watson, the one target that he had, that little screen, was a first down, but whatever. And then Love, too, in the second half, he missed Aaron Jones on that third and two. Fuck, that was a backbreaker, too, because if we pick that up, that's probably points as well. But and then the spots, I don't want to get into the refs. So the third down spot was probably
that was
worse.
A bad one.
I mean, the fourth down spot was pretty bad. I hate the call there for the tush push, either way. And then I rewatched it. You go back that same drive, it was the end of the first quarter. They flipped the field after. The second down spot was bad too. Aaron Jones had a nice play on second and 10. It should have been like second or a third and half a yard. And it was a full yard. I don't know. Whatever. We're, you know, it's so long ago now. The Bo Melton touchdown was very cool. They kind of faked a screen and he was wide ass open. That was fun. We talked about Christian Watson. Tucker Kraft had a touchdown. Took several steps and then he spiked the ball. I thought that was fun. And Aaron Jones, again, I think that was his fifth game in a row with over 100 yards rushing. The 57-yard run was very cool. I love the little spin at the end where he got like an extra 10 yards. He also had the two-point conversion. And something else that a lot of people talked about was Zach Tom going out with that concussion. We were talking too, because what, Debo got tested for concussion, came back. Tucker got tested for concussion. And when they showed Tucker on the sideline, he was like wincing and one of his eyes were closed. And I'm like, oh, fuck, he looks like he's concussed. But he ended up coming back in the game. But Zach Tom, those last four drives when he was out, was when the Packers, I don't think they put up any points on those drives. Maybe a field goal. I do not remember. But not good.
No field goals.
No field. Yeah. Oh, just the extra points. That's all it was. Didn't he have like a, it doesn't fucking matter. Whatever. We lost the game. Defense. God, Devondre Campbell. He was bad. I hate that I don't like him now because of how great he was that first year. What a fun story it was. But God, not a great year for him. Taking on Twitter, saying he's not going to play through injuries. And I kind of wish he didn't now either. There was that one play where they throw it out in the flat to Kittle. And Devondre just like, all he had to do was push him out of bounds. It should have been a pickup of nothing or a very small gain. And it was a first down pickup. It's like, Devondre, what are we doing? It
should be. How about the play
tough
where he had a wide open shot at the unabated to the quarterback and he just like stutter stepped like laterally and didn't hit him?
Yeah, that was fucking frustrating too. I forgot about that one. God damn it. And then, I mean, we touched on it too. The Darnell Savage. I mean, he had the cool pick six against Dallas, but once again, like I said, against the Bears, he just doesn't play like a guy I want playing safety for my football team. Dropped the pick. He was in coverage on the Kittle touchdown, which it seems like that was Anthony Johnson Jr.'s fault more than Savage. But then the Christian McCaffrey touchdown, too, where he just... These guys in the secondary just love to play hockey when they're trying to make tackles. I just do not get it. Keyshawn Nixon also had a ball he probably could have picked off. Not the best. And again, like I said at the top, Brock Purdy just... I was just yelling. He's just not good. In the rain, the small hands, it wasn't working. I mean, the only real pass he had, it felt like, was that Ayuk one in triple coverage on that final drive. That was the one where I was like, fuck, okay. Like, he finally earned it once. And, that final drive, too, like, guys were making plays around him. Couldn't really get too pissed off. And, of course, Joe Barry was breaking all the way down until they let that touchdown go in, which I was kind of happy with. At least it gave us a shot. I'd much rather have the season end with us getting the ball back with some time and there being a chance than there being like 10 seconds or whatever it would have been. And
how many seasons in the last 10 years have ended with Aaron Rodgers not getting a shot to go back on the field, right? Like, that's tough.
Yeah.
So I'd honestly rather see him go through a shitty cross the field, like a ball we know he shouldn't throw, he knows he shouldn't throw, like have that happen. And like, at least it was in our hands.
Yeah, because I mean, the last time we played the Niners in the playoffs too, we lost on the field goal attempt. And then when in the 2013 playoffs at Lambeau, lost on a field goal attempt as well. Something else to throw out there, I know a lot of people got on Rashawn Gary in the second half of the year, wasn't very good for him. But he did have two big plays in this game. I thought he was in on a sack or forced a sack on third down, and then he tipped a ball on third down, which is, turnover, essentially turnover causing plays. So for my, I would say if he, earned the money at least in this game. And then special teams,
Colby Wooden, special.
They're, and God, it kind of sucks because I obviously don't like Rich Bisaccia. I've bitched about him a lot this year. And obviously everyone's focusing on Anders and that miss. But Colby Wooden, I believe, had the blocked field goal. That was pretty cool. Keyshawn Nixon with that kick return was fucking, I was jumping, hooting and hollering. Then he fumbled and everyone's like, ah. But of course, Eric Wilson jumping on it, saving the day. The captain for the game too. I think he was captain more than anyone else on the team this year. So we'll see if he comes back. And then, even the, what else was it? Oh, yeah. Again, I really thought we were winning the game until the missed field goal. And then as soon as you see 6 minutes is left, it's like, ah, that's right. We're the Green Bay Packers. We're going to lose to the 49ers in the playoffs. So that's it. That's the game. Season's over. Any final thoughts on the game? I don't know. Again, I don't think we need to hash too much with this game. Nothing.
Jordan Love just didn't play like himself in the second half, I think that's really what it comes down to. I shouldn't say the whole second half. He did score the two touchdowns early in the third quarter. After that, it was kind of... I think if we get Jordan Love for a whole four quarters and maybe Darnell or Keyshawn Nixon pick those balls off, either one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to go into Anders, but I think if any one of those things happens, we win the game. It was that close. I mean, we controlled the ball more than they did. You take away the last couple minutes of the game, and we controlled it by 3 minutes, right? So it's like, I mean, we were pretty impressive for a 7 seed going up against a 1 seed, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, that's 100%. That was impressive.
I mean, going until the NFC Championship between Detroit and San Francisco, every team that won the playoff or the turnover battle in the playoffs won the game.
That's right.
And we lost the turnover battle 2-0. And that was, I mean, really the difference in the game. We had a shot at a pick on Purdy. We didn't take advantage. And San Francisco took advantage of a couple of interceptions. So that's the ball game.
And, that Dallas game, we were talking how reminiscent it was to playoff games in the past. This one, not a Packer game, but that last pick was so reminiscent, and I'm sure people saw the side-by-side of Favre with the Vikings against the Saints, where just across the field, just a bad decision.
Those never get old. The Favre and Rodgers comparisons to Love.
I know. It's nice, and I guess we haven't said this year because we've obviously bitched about the comparisons, but it's so nice that that's what we're upset about with the quarterback right now. It's like, let's quit talking about the other great quarterbacks we've had in the past. But yeah, good season. I think we'll probably review it more in the future here later on in the offseason, but hard to get too pissed off, especially with, moving on to the next thing. Should we have a break first? 20 minutes. We'll have a quick commercial break. All right, and we are back with Joe Barry is gone. Joe Barry is gone. He was fired. I am very happy. I was pretty optimistic. I think a lot of people were pessimistic after the game, like, oh, shit, Joe Barry's definitely going to be back, blah, blah, blah. But that last presser the day after, LaFleur spoke very, very highly of Adam Stenovich, Tom Clemens, Rich Bisaccia, And then when they got to Joe Barry, he's like, I still got to talk to my staff. I haven't talked to my staff yet. I'm like, I like the vibe of this.
When did the report come out that he actually had a 4-year deal? Like, I think all along everyone was assuming that his 3 years was up. Like, we didn't need to fire him. He was just going to be, just walk him off into the sunset, change the key code at Lambeau or whatever. And then it's like, oh, actually, he has another year at least.
Yeah, that was we talked about that too, because Rob Domofsky was the one who originally brought that up, and he never said that's what it is. He was kind of making an assumption, but he said Mike Pettine and the position coaches usually get 3-year deals. So they were under the assumption it was a 3-year deal. Now, maybe he got some type of extension, which I don't know why or how they would have done that. Maybe I think they were talking, that's how like Jerry Gray left too, like a year or two before your contract's up, you can extend it, and maybe that's what happened, but I don't know if you need to get into the semantics of that. But either way, Joe Barry gone. Very happy with that. We'll obviously talk about our new DC pretty quick. And again, the best thing about our new DC right now, Jeff Hafley, is his approval rating is already higher than Joe Barry's ever was. When we hired Joe Barry, it was mental gymnastics from the start, because we were like, well, he's from a good system. I know he's been a bad defensive coordinator, so I'm glad we're at least beyond that at this point. Someone else who got fired, as I mentioned, Chris Gizzi. And I didn't think he was actually going to get canned or anything. You know, a lot of fans like ask for the training staff and shit to get canned when injuries pop up. But a couple of days after the season was over, I think the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote about how Christian Watson and Eric Stokes were going to visit the University of Wisconsin to see their hamstring specialist. And it's never good when you send someone out of the building to see a different specialist. And sure enough, a couple days later, Chris Gizzi, who was the guy who ran out after September 11th with the American flag, and he had a really cool handlebar mustache. But moved on from him. No word yet on who we've hired, but I don't think anyone's going to really have any. You know, we didn't know our defensive coordinator when that was announced, his name, so I don't think anyone's going to know who the new athletic trainer is. Todd, you got something?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Well, look, he wanted to say something. But anyways, moving on. The new defensive coordinator, nice, you know, it was like about 10 days or so. With the interview news coming out, I'm glad we didn't have a podcast then to talk about guys who were completely irrelevant. Matt LaFleur brought in a couple of guys from the Baltimore Ravens coaching staff. He talked to Brandon Staley. He did actually talk to Wink Martindale as well, which wasn't reported, but they did eventually settle on. Oh, and then, of course, you know, Chris Parker, who was kind of reported as
a side note,
offered the job. We'll talk about that for Take News. But then out of nowhere, on Wednesday evening, afternoon, Jeff Hafley, at the time, head coach of Boston College, which was kind of, at first, right away, I'm like, what? Who? And I'm like,
yeah.
Right away, it's like, huh? But the more you dig into this guy, I think you get more excited. First of all, you know, we've seen the clips of him talking at Ohio State or, you know, when he was with the Niners. And this guy comes off as pretty smart, and he seems like a good leader. Good speaker. You know, he was obviously a head coach, which is nice. He was only a co-defensive coordinator at Ohio State. He does have 7 years of experience in the NFL as a defensive back coach, and he was at Boston College for the 4 years. I don't know. I like him. I know, and we were texting last night, but he's technically more of a 4-3 guy, but I think that's going to probably get more hype than it really should, just because 80% of the time now the league is in a nickel defense. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure maybe Gary and LVN will, you know, they can improve just having their hand in the dirt once again, which they really were great at that in college. But I don't know, opening thoughts? What are your guys' thoughts on this hire here, Todd?
I just, through perusing through Twitter and trying to find as much as I could on this guy, Ben Fennell has a nice little thread that I look through and some really interesting stats on there. But to summarize it all, it's just basically that this guy's going to run a lot more blitz packages, and he's going to be more aggressive, and there's going to be more man is what it seems like. So I think that that's really exciting based on our personnel. And I think having the 4-3 or what will essentially be like a 4-2, you know, because we'll be in nickel. And then I think that's exciting just based on the pressure that he brings a lot of times with those two, or brings a safety down. There's a lot of cool information out there that people are putting out on Twitter right now of just like how aggressive he is and the way that he moves his coverages and stuff like that is kind of interesting. And basically making the offense react to you,
yes,
versus sitting back and reacting to the offense. Like, granted, and I think if you look at his recent history, like, Boston College doesn't have the athletes that Ohio State does. But when he implemented that scheme at Ohio State, they were amazing, right? That was that 2019 Ohio State defense that was unreal. So, like, I think if the right guys are in place, this could be a really successful opportunity. But it's kind of like makes me feel a little bit like Dom Capers, where it's like if we don't quite have the guys or we don't quite get that pressure, like, we could get burned. So it's the opposite of Joe Barry's defense. There could be some chunk plays, you know, but in general, quarterbacks that can't handle the pressure, like, it'd be really fun to watch the defense dominate. So that's it's exciting.
I think I had kind of a similar reaction. My first thought was, who in the hell is this guy? Because it wasn't anybody that the media had talked about. And then, so I wasn't near my computer when I got the news. I was at a conference for work, so I'm literally just getting the news from, you know, friends texting me. It's like, oh, it's Jeff Hafley. Who? Head coach at Boston College. And I'm like, so we hired the dude that Boston College fired? That didn't make me feel good. And then come to find out, no, he was actually at Boston College, mm-hmm. had some success, took him to a couple of bowl games, was at Ohio State, had, like you said, a terrific defense at Ohio State. And granted, Ohio State had some really damn good players in 2019. Boston College, probably not so much. But the one thing that I saw in reading up on him after the fact was that his defenses are always good at communication. Like, they don't have a lot of breakdowns. And how often, and I mean, not only under Joe Barry, but Mike Pettine and, you know, Dom Capers later on, were there defensive breakdowns where there are guys pointing and, you know, trying to figure out who the hell made the mistake? I mean, shit, we just talked about it in the recap of San Francisco, Savage versus Anthony Johnson Jr. So if we can just get rid of the miscommunications, the miscues, the mental errors, and be a little bit more aggressive, I mean, I'm optimistic. I'm not going to say that this is a home run hire just because I don't know enough about the guy, but I feel better, and I mentioned this in the group chat yesterday, I feel better even if we move to a 4-3 of having Van Ness and Gary in a 4-3 under Hafley than having Van Ness and Gary in a 3-4 under Joe Barry. So I guess that's a win.
People have talked too how, and what we've kind of asked for and what we expected a little bit going into the year is Quay Walker's role. I know a lot of people have talked about Jair as well, but if we do some of that stuff and you just make Quay that guy in the middle of the field who ranges around, and if we can actually, you know, we talked about how later on where it seems like Matt took over the defense a little bit more after the Carolina game and he publicly said he was going to be a little bit more involved, we did start blitzing more. And then there was times we're watching blitzes. I don't know if Devondre Campbell's a great example, but there was times with Quay too where they rush and you're like, that's not the, he didn't really blitz the right way. Maybe now if we actually practice blitzing and just have those looks in practice, we'll be able to actually create more pressure on those plays as well.
But it seemed like sometimes we had an open man at the quarterback, like Campbell against San Francisco, for whatever reason, he just doesn't get there.
Well,
do you guys happen to know who the linebacker was that's on the team that played for Hafley?
Oh, yeah, Isaiah McDuffie, of course.
And he had a lot of success under Hafley also.
Yeah. Speaking about guys missing too, Devonta Wyatt, he's like the quintessential guy who gets pressure but cannot finish a sack. The other thing, I know you touched on it too for dictating, but Hafley's a big press corner guy as well, which is fun. If nothing else, it sounds like we aren't going to have the pussy shit on third down where we just play off. So I'm very, very excited about that. Another thing on top of it is the things Richard Sherman said, which you guys probably saw as well, where he had only great things to say. He said he's been around a lot of smart coaches in the NFL, and he's among the smartest. He also said that they would give them looks in practice that they would literally see on game day. So it's just, again, where, and again, dictating. And again, I'm a dumb fan, and reading about this guy too, and he's kind of said this, where when you press, you can eliminate half of the route tree. It's like, yeah, if you just press a guy, and obviously it's going to take some practice too, but like my favorite player growing up was Al Harris, and that's where he made his bread and butter, was making disruptions at the line of scrimmage and forcing guys to do what they don't want to do, get that timing off, and that just never was really the case with Joe Barry.
Well, and it seems like we have the personnel for it already almost. I mean, Jaire Alexander is physical on receivers. I mean, we've seen him multiple times shut down Justin Jefferson. And then Eric Stokes maybe isn't the most physical. Number one, he has to stay healthy, but he also has the makeup speed so that if he misses at the line of scrimmage, he can get back in the play and make a play on the ball. So it's not like we don't have the personnel that we can't play this. So that's what makes playing the zone defense or back the 10 yards on third and four even more frustrating.
I semi feel like Eric Stokes is going to be a much better press corner. He's long a little bit. Like, I don't know if he ever, in college, if he was a press corner or not, but like, he reminds me a little bit of Devon House. And when Devon House left the Packers and he went to the Jaguars and he played press corner, he had actually a really good year. 2 years maybe after that where he actually...
Yeah, I think he was good for 1 year, then he fell off. I know he didn't.
What it was?
I know he didn't play through the entire contract that he got.
Just reminds me a little bit of like the body shape and size. Yes. Where it's like long, lean. He's faster than Devon House, but like he could be a good press corner. Who knows?
I mean, at this point with Eric Stokes, anything we get out of him is a bonus.
You can put him in just a cast, just preemptively. Put him in boots and walk him out there.
Bubble wrap, like in the Little Giants.
And then with Jeff, too, we touched on but the versatility. So it will be interesting to see what the hell he wants to run, because he's never been a sole defensive coordinator. Again, he was a co-defensive coordinator at Ohio State, and Boston College, he was the head coach. And it's funny because I don't know if you guys realized there's that hour-long interview he has on YouTube with that one dude. I don't remember his name. But that interview came out like 3 days ago when he was still the Boston College head coach. And he's talking about all that stuff. And it's funny to like watch the interview and hear his quotes now knowing he left Boston College, because he's talking about how he just wants to coach defense again and how he hasn't been able to coach defense and specifically defensive backs. So it's one weird, again, like you said, Billy, and I think I had the same thought when it said Boston College head coach. I assumed he didn't have a job either. It's very weird, and it goes along with Nick Saban retiring, because it's probably bigger college news than it is NFL and Packers news almost, because it seems like he's the first guy that's going to be leaving college football because of how much recruiting is becoming a bigger thing, and even just keeping your own guys around instead of actually being a football coach.
He talked about how he doesn't like the NIL and the transfer portal and all that stuff. Like he said, he just wants to coach football. And I told you guys, well, if you just want to coach football, there's no better place to coach than Green Bay, because there isn't a whole lot of else to do in the city.
Yeah. And again, the versatility, he worked under Robert Saleh, Mike Pettine, which is pretty funny. I mean, it's one of those guys, again, you don't know anything about, but once you start reading about him, it's like he seems like a pretty, you don't want to say perfect candidate, but God, it's hard not to get excited. I mean, again, he was in the hot seat in November when Boston College wasn't playing very well. The other thing, and I don't know if this is a big thing, it's me and maybe my own softy Matt LaFleur brain, but leaving Boston College right now is kind of, you know, you got your players, you got the whole staff and everything, and then you bail last minute. I know, and we'll talk about it with Take News, how it wasn't reported, but it couldn't be reported that he was interviewing, because if you're interviewing when you already have a job, that's pretty fucking bad for the college that you're at. So, I don't know. His introductory press conference is going to be, I'm very much looking forward to that, especially with how fucking terrible Joe Barry was in front of the media, because again, like, even just the clips I've watched, like, I've the football, the amount of football this guy knows is so much more than Joe Barry ever talked about. Because Joe Barry, when he played, he had them play a passive defense. And even in talking about football, he was just so passive and just talked about very vague things, where I'm very excited to finally have someone who seems like an incredibly smart dude leading a room. So I'm very much looking for. I wonder when they're going to introduce him. It's got to be pretty quick here. But yeah, you guys have anything else? He's not buddies with Matt LaFleur. That was kind of the report last night. But Tom Silverstein and Jason Wilde both said that he's not really friends with Matt LaFleur. It's more so he's a friend of a friend. You know,
like an acquaintance type level person.
Yeah, like someone maybe you go to a bachelor party and he's like one of those guys who you hung out with once, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, that was fun. Goodbye. See you later. The other thing to talk about is, and this is what I was, as the longer it went on, I'm like, I don't like how this is going because of the defensive position coaches. And I know I harp on the position coaches on this podcast more than I probably should, but it got me thinking, and this is before we hired him. Because obviously Matt doesn't like firing guys. Matt LaFleur has never fired a defensive position coach since taking over in 2019. Jason Simmons was a DB coach, and they kind of mutually separated because he went to Carolina to coach with Matt Rhule, who he coached with in college. We had Mike Smith, who left after his contract was up, went to Minnesota with Mike Pettine. And then obviously Jerry Gray, who went to Atlanta and is also the associate head coach as well. So Tom Silverstein, in his piece last night with this, did report that Joe Barry was not allowed to make any defensive coaching decisions with his staff, which is a little fucked, and you feel a little bad about Joe because, one, obviously we all wanted him fired, but it's not like the defense was terrible this year. It just was very inconsistent, and I don't think anyone felt good about it. But it's like, Matt, buddy, we gotta get rid of some of this. And Wilde and Silverstein both said they believe there's going to be staff changes this time, and I really hope so. I don't know who. Again, we're just fans, so it's not like we know who's great on this coaching staff. But a guy like Jerry Montgomery, who hasn't really developed a ton of guys on the defensive line this year, was different because, you know, we finally had Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden, who did show up. But before that, I mean, fuck, who? Like, Dean Lowry wasn't a good guy. And on top of that, he's the run game coordinator. And I don't know if you know this about the Packers defense recently, the run game on defense has not been very good. So I'm very, very curious to see what happens with that over probably the next week or so if anyone leaves.
Spencer, you brought up the personnel on defense, and I kind of had the same thought as, you know, going into this, even before we hired Halfley, I was kind of thinking, boy, I wonder if we hire somebody that runs the 4-3, because Preston Smith is a bigger outside linebacker. He's a pretty good run defender. Van Ness and Gary, like we talked about, both played the 4-3 in college. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't like Van Ness coming out in the draft this year, was because he played in the 4-3 and was going to be so raw in the 3-4. And it got me thinking, like, if we have all this personnel that, to me, being a dumb fan, again, makes sense in a 4-3, were we doing Joe Barry a lot of favors, giving him this personnel and trying to shoehorn it into a 3-4? You know, we'll see how things work out if we actually run a true 4-3 or if it's a hybrid or whatever the deal is. But, I mean, to your point, it just kind of makes me wonder some of the personnel decisions and trying to fit it into the defense that Joe Barry is running.
And the thing with that, too, is what people have said is, like, Halfley listens to his players and plays to their strengths, yada, yada. And that's kind of what we heard about Joe Barry. But looking back now, I just feel like Joe Barry had such a basic-ass defense where you're only really rushing the front five guys, like the five guys closest to the line of scrimmage, where the strongest guys are probably going to, you know, perform the best, where you're not really making anything too complicated so no one struggles, but at the same time you're not scheming anything up to really get guys pressure or whatever. So that'll be very interesting to see too going forward here. I don't know. I'm excited.
Do you think there's any chance that we run the Y9 since he did coach with Sala for a couple years in San Fran? I don't think all 3 years. I think he was there for 3 years. I don't think Sala was there for all three, but
he did work under Sala for 2 years. I believe it was. But
he was at San Fran.
Yeah, because I know that, God, what's his name? Total Packers, I believe. God, what? I can't. Clayton. I believe Clayton's his name. He watched a bunch of Boston College tape, and he was showing like all the different alignments that Boston College has played. So I wouldn't rule out anything at this point. I think it's...
I just think it would be interesting to see Gary from a wide nine set and just see if that boosts him at all. Just because
and Van
he
Ness,
is...
they're both athletic freaks.
Because they're so athletic. That's why I'm like... Because that's what the wide nine benefits, like... Nick Bosa so much because like mm-hmm. you get that tackle, he's got to
in
his
space.
Kick step. He's got to be out there, right? Like it just puts stress on those tackles. I don't know. I just think that would be interesting to see us run that every now and then.
Just a little creativity on defense, right?
Yes.
Like just show me something more than what Joe Barry was.
But overall, do we approve of the hire? How would you guys? Let's. Let's
I mean,
give it
tentatively,
a grade.
We
let's,
don't
let's
know.
Give it, yeah, but let's give it a grade right now. How are we feeling? Because, I mean, I like the Mike Pettine hire when it happened. And looking back, I think we were probably too hard on him. But, like, Joe Barry off the jump was, like, D plus, C minus. And I feel like Jeff is, like, I don't know, I'd say a B, B plus at least.
I was going to say B minus. Just,
oh,
just,
B minus.
I just don't, it's going to, there's going to be growing pains with this personnel in certain places. Like, we don't have... stack linebackers. Like, who we got to put some linebackers that play the 4-3. We got to get some. So, like, that's going to be tough. And then the running, he runs a lot of single high, which the league doesn't, the league pretty much doesn't do single high. So, I don't, we'll see how he transitions that way, too.
Yeah.
We'll I'm with see. You. I was thinking a B or a B minus. Like, who would have been an A in my book? Jim Leonard probably would have been an A in my book.
Wink. Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick would have
Steve
been an
Belichick
A.
With
I,
Bill,
I actually did not like Wink Martindale at all.
No.
Why is you that? Know, the, why don't you like him? You don't like the look of him? He's too much of a football guy.
No, I just don't know that he's that. It seemed like he tried to run his system. Even if he didn't have the players for it.
He's just going to blitz every time, no matter what. It's not like creative. You're just bringing pressure.
He was never get along with Matt LaFleur either because like he resigned from the Giants after Dable fired some of his position coaches. He's like, okay, fuck you. It's like, okay, well, Matt's probably not going to give you a bunch of like...
That was a weird thing too. Like he was fired, but he's not actually fired, but actually he is fired, but...
Apparently he
in
just
all
left.
Honesty, he just left and
he just
wasn't
left and
fired.
Didn't tell anyone, which is just, wild.
Yeah,
but yeah, we'll see. I'm excited to hear what Jeff has to say whenever he actually gets to Green Bay. Something else. This is super lame. He has a daughter. He has two daughters, I believe. One of them, her name is Hope. So
it's
Hope,
lame to have daughters.
No, I'm saying Hope. Hope is on its way to Green Bay. Very lame. With that, take news.
Football time.
Backdoor Will deglazing himself.
You always twist my fucking word.
I don't know why they do it, Ben. You don't said that. I just can't believe I said that. Shoot.
Take news.
Take news for the week. Don't think we have to talk about this too much, but I just love the drama. I love the beat reporting. I'm always rooting for the Big J journalist for the most part, but got to talk about this. This is once again the Blogger Boys versus the Big J journalists. Sure everyone saw this. Andrew Mirtag from Cheesehead TV, I think, or Pack-A-Day Podcast, one of the two. I don't fucking... tweeted this out, God, almost a week ago, maybe? Probably like last Friday or something. Based on two separate sources, Christian Parker is currently in Green Bay, and I'm being led to believe has been offered the Green Bay DC job. No word on if it has been accepted. Obviously, that did not happen. No real credible source after that or reporter said anything about it for the most part. I also thought it was kind of funny how he says two separate sources, and then later on, after it was found out to not be true, he said his source was bad. It's like, so were you lying? Was it one or two sources?
The verbiage there of I'm being led to believe.
Yeah, right.
It's like, all right.
Well, and then has been offered the job, but no word if he has accepted. Like, I feel like these things go quick. Like, you're offered the job, you accept it. Bam, yes. Done.
Well, once it went over 24 hours, I especially felt like it was BS. But at first, again, with Matt and the way he holds his staff, maybe a guy, if he's getting his first shot to be a DC, wants to be able to control who the position coaches are. And if Matt, once again, wasn't doing that, I could get someone moving on. And it does make you wonder, obviously Jim Leonard wanted to stay close to home, but if Joe Barry wasn't allowed to pick his position coaches, maybe Jim wasn't allowed to either, and that's why he didn't take the job. I don't know. Once again, I have no idea. So obviously that didn't happen. So after it came out yesterday that Jeff was going to be the new DC, Tom Silverstein, after writing a pretty good article, also posted on Twitter, quote tweeting someone asking about the report about Christian Parker, and Tom said, "Most erroneous report out there. Please don't take the word of clueless bloggers." I just fucking love this. "They don't have inside sources. They don't cover the team. Stick with me. I'll let you know what's what when it's time." And it's just, that is such a curmudgeon old man type of thing to tweet out there. Like, especially with like Tom's picture on Twitter is like the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel or like the Writers Guild logo. Like, he's just to the point
cool.
of just being
a, super cool.
Yeah, just being a big J journalist. But I mean, he's right. That's the thing. When it came out, it's like no one else was reporting it. You know, no one else touched on it. And I kind of agreed with Tom, I think. But then later, Justice Mosqueda, who I really respect, and he's kind of a blogger boy, whatever, but he is credentialed. I believe he goes to like the Combine and stuff, and he has had sources in the past. Like, he did say that, God, who's the tight end who's on the Giants now, who is Waller, that the Packers had interest in Darren Waller, which did seem to be true. Aaron Nagler also had that. Obviously, we didn't make the trade for him.
Packers are interested in everybody, but yeah.
Yep, and then Justice also said that the Packers were interested in Jalen Hyatt, potentially in the first round in last year's draft, who ended up going in the third round of the Giants. So once again, not a great source, but either way, I love Justice. He's one of my favorite followers on Twitter. But Justice quote tweets Tom Silverstein and says, "Weird gatekeeping from the beat that collectively had zero scoops during the entire defensive coordinator search. Anyway, here's the Packers offensive playbook," and it's some article where he broke down like the whole Packers offensive playbook. But I like that too, because that tweet kind of popped off, but he also linked his article on there, so good on Justice for getting those extra clicks potentially. But back to that, it's just, and we talked about at the front, nobody knew Haffey was, you know, being interviewed, because he couldn't let anyone know he was getting interviewed because he was the head coach at Boston College. Now, Wink Martindale, we probably should have known he got interviewed, which Tom broke after the news happened. But that, I would give him one scoop there, because nobody else reported that outside of Tom. But I get Justice being upset, especially with Green Bay. I mean, we all remember Julius Peppers when he got signed with the Packers. Nobody saw that coming. Like, I remember we went out drinking that night. I woke up super hungover on one of our buddy's couches, and they're like, "The Packers signed Julius Peppers." I'm like, no, it didn't. And then I looked, I'm like, oh my God, Adam Schefter said he signed Julius Peppers. So these things happen, but what side of this very important argument are you guys on? Are you on the blogger boy side, or are you on the Big J journalist side? Todd?
I mean, I'm not on Tom's side.
Boo.
Really, ever.
Come on.
He's definitely a curmudgeon.
Ever?
And the stick with me thing, like, what is he, like Scar from The Lion King, like, and with the hyenas in the background?
That
like,
part, I'm not that solid part was reasons. Weird.
It's a weird, but I will say, like, when it comes to scoops and having sources, if you're not close to the team, and almost geographically close to the team,
yes,
it is very hard to have sources, right? Like, it's not easy to make connections with people if you're in California and the team is in Green Bay. Like, that just doesn't...
So, that reminds me. So, I put out a tweet, and I felt a little bad about it, because I was making fun of the Parker, and this is before it came out that we hired Jeff and all that shit. But I tweeted out, it's like, yeah, this reminds me of when someone was reporting that the Packers had made an offer the head coaching job in 2019 to Josh McDaniels. And it's because I quote tweeted Zach Jacobson, who was dunking on the guy who said the Christian Parker thing. And I said that it was Zachary Jacobson who reported back in 2019 that Josh McDaniels was offered the head coaching job. And then Zach quote tweeted me and said, "Well, actually, you know, I feel kind of bad for him, because that happened to me before. And, you know, when you lose your credibility, it's hard to get it back." And I was like, I feel a little bad about saying that, but at the same time, he thought he had the scoop on who the next coach of the Green Bay Packers was. It's like, you do have to, and he lives in California. It's like, you do have to realize who you are at times. And he used to have, like, beat reporter in his Twitter bio and shit. It's like, I know we're all trying our best to, like, report on the Packers and shit, and he does write for Packer Report now, or Forbes. Some other one-word magazine. Heavy. I think it's Heavy. Whatever. Writes for the Packers. But it's just, leave the big scoops to the big boys, and we can find the little crumbs later on. Billy?
Now, I'm not on Twitter anymore.
Oh.
But
it's 'cause we're all when
I was on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it these days, I followed, you know, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the Green Bay Press Gazette, Jason Wilde, Rob Domofsky, Tom Oates, you know, all those guys. What I struggle with bloggers is anybody and their uncle and his dentist can have a blog these days, almost like a podcast, mm-hmm. right?
Huh? We're way above that.
There's A to Z sports blog. Yeah, there's Bleacher Wendell. Report. There's Last Word on Pro Sports. It's like anybody with a computer and a keyboard and an internet connection can just go off and blast off whatever they say, and they can say sources. My source could be my dog, and I don't even have a dog. But if I cite my dog, there you go. It's a valid source, and Josh McDaniels is the next head coach of the Green Bay Packers. So that's why when I was on Twitter, which I'm not anymore again, that's why I followed the big boys knew that I trusted, because maybe these bloggers do have sources, but I don't know who does and who doesn't. So I trust the guys that have been in the game for way longer than these other folks.
And then, like, Tyler Herrick from Cheesehead TV, he brought it up last night, too, how a lot of big stories have kind of broke. You know, Big B was, you know, the Make-A-Wish kid who found out that Rodgers had the broken thumb. But something like that's like, well, we knew how he got the information. And then there was, like, the report of Adams getting traded, which was a thing on Twitter, which I'm sure was probably, like, one of Adam's family members kind of leaked it on Reddit. Or, sorry, it was Reddit, not Twitter. And then, like, I you know, half-assed, like, jokingly, tongue-in-cheek, quote-tweeted, because back in, like, 2018, just because I saw on Instagram Demaryius Randall was going into surgery, so I just tweeted, Demaryius, according to sources, Demaryius Randall is going into surgery today. Please credit me, because I'm the first one to report it. And I was the first person to report that he was getting surgery. But it's like, it doesn't, you know, who really gives a shit? And like you're saying, Billy, anyone could say it. But then at the same time, you know, sometimes blogger boys can be right about things. But then a piece that I always reference is Tom Silverstein in 2018, 2019, talking about the GM search and how Mark Murphy didn't allow Darren Rizzi to get hired and all that. It's like something like that, and there's so many different sources in there, and it's so intricate, you know, the whole how it's going on behind the scenes. A blogger boy isn't going to get any of that shit, but someone who lives in Green Bay and who has been there for 30 years reporting on the team, they can report on shit like that. But
So the blogger boys, you know, I'm not saying they can't be right, but the percentage of the time that they're right, in my mind, is far less than the percentage of the time as a Silverstein or a Wilde or whoever that is on the beat and has been for 20 plus years.
Like a big guy can report something and it's news. A blogger boy can report it, but it's not really news until it's confirmed by someone else.
Correct.
That's what it usually comes down to. But yeah, let's take news. I don't have any, is Kyle an idiot, because we never do at the end of the season. Bill, do you have some Spenny? Perfect. Excellent. So moving on, the offseason preview, just very briefly here. We can look at free agents. Sadly, some Packer players that will be leaving us. First off, you know, salary cap, all that, we're starting to get out of cap hell. In my, you know, Ken Ingles, Sport Track, whatever, calculator. If the Packers cut David Bakhtiari and cut Devondre Campbell, they will have about $20 million in cap space next year. Now, the draft class is probably going to cost, I think it's like $12 million, $13 million. So, depending on more finagling, we'll have about $8 million to play with, potentially. Aaron Jones, maybe he'll get restructured. Some other guys might get restructured. Jordan Love's going to have to get a new contract eventually, probably next season at some point. We do still have him one more year under contract. But guys who are free agents, and we'll rip through them. Let's just answer yes or no if you want him back. All right. Yash Nyman.
No.
No.
Yeah, I don't want him either. Keyshawn Nixon.
If the price is right.
I'll say yeah.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I want him back, but I kind of just want him. It's kind of that weird thing where I didn't mind bringing Devon House back in the day, but then we played him so much. It's like I'd like him back as a reserve player and as a returner, and that's it. Darnell Savage.
Can I give a little bit of background on this when I say yes?
Uh-oh, I suppose.
Just in case, because Half does play. Did I say his name right? Halfley. Halfley. Halfley does bring three safeties in the nickel. Mm. He could play a box safety role. I really like Darnell Savage. So, yes, for that reason.
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say no, too. It's just, I don't have Rudy Ford written down here. Maybe he's not a free agent, but I'd rather have, that's Jonathan
he's
Ford.
He's not.
Oh, that's funny. SportTrack is wrong. They have Jonathan Ford written, but it's Rudy Ford, unless that's his real name. It's Jonathan and not Rudy, because Jonathan Ford is the big boy defensive tackle.
But I was going to say, I would like Rudy Ford back, actually.
I'd rather have Rudy than Darnell for sure. One, he can play special teams, and two, I think he was a more consistent player.
What if his name is Jonathan Ford?
Yeah, I guess Rudy probably isn't on his birth certificate, but
what does SpotTrack say for his position?
Free safety.
Free safety, yeah.
Well, then, yes, that's Rudy Ford.
Did he go to Auburn?
Oh.
I think so. Okay, moving on. A.J. Dillon, this is a big one here. A.J. Dillon.
No.
No.
Okay. Billy had me worried there. I would say no unless he wants to turn into a fullback and delete his Instagram account. Eric Wilson?
Not even then. No.
Yeah.
I would take Eric Wilson back. He's going to be cheap. Good special teamer.
I would agree with that. And also, if we do move to the 4-3, I feel like we're really thin at linebacker, so we need depth.
Yeah, I mean, God, he didn't play very well in spots at the second half of the year, but I'd bring him back too. Again, special teams captain. Come on, we need to have these guys for Rich because we know he's not going to be able to coach anyone up. Josiah DeGuara.
No.
R.A.P. in peace. Yeah, a guy who never was. We'll always have that one screen pass against the Lions in Jordan Love's debut in 2020, 2021, I believe. 2021, yeah. Tyler Davis.
The only thing with Tyler Davis is he is going to be so cheap. So he could come back.
Coming off an ACL, and even before that, I think he was really just a guy. I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yeah, just because I'm a loser and I like seeing him doing the shit on the sideline. It seems like he's a good team guy. And there wasn't hype around him, but they were saying he looked, for how much he struggled in 2022 during training camp, he looked pretty good before tearing his ACL in. Again, to have a good special teams guy, another tight end, I guess we'll see. I mean, you could always cut him, too, so I wouldn't mind. Zane Anderson, we don't have to talk about him. John Runyon? He's tricky.
Hey, you got to draft a guard if you walk from him. That's tough.
We got Sean Ryan. We got Caleb Jones reliable. And Luke Tenuta, the tackles. There's some
Sean Ryan is too much of a liability in the pass game, unfortunately. I would say bring him back.
I would bring him back, but I unfortunately think he's priced himself out of Green Bay.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think he'd want to come back on a reserve role, and I think people saw it too. Oh, God. That was okay. Oh, fuck. I am going to do it. Okay. So, John Runyon, he was a fifth, sixth round pick. Solid career with the Packers. We didn't expect a lot out of him. We're going to play this clip of John Runyon, what he had to say, when it all, started flowing into him, where he's realizing his day as a Packer is probably over.
What does it mean to you to wear the Chief?
I'm sorry. That was awesome. I don't know. There's a better organization out there.
Is there a moment during your time here that really encapsulates what it means to be a Packer?
I think it's just... just the brotherhood. It was unreal. It was an organization. Everybody inside. And the people out of the facility. The fans, it's a special place. met some really good people here. Hope I don't leave. It was a good time. Really appreciate it.
Okay, and now we have another clip. This is AJ Dillon, the second round pick who, you know, the mayor of Door County. He loves Green Bay. He loves everything about the Packers, you know. This is what AJ Dillon had to say after the game talking to the media. AJ Dillon did not talk to the media after the game or cleaning out his locker, much like the month of October when he refused to talk to the media when he was struggling. So, wow, thanks for those words, AJ. You really do love Green Bay. Really hope we bring it back.
He's going to take out a full page goodbye, though. Just wait.
On his Instagram. He's not going to spend money to actually put it in the paper.
In the newspaper in Door County.
Maybe Door County. I would. I don't know if players still do that. I remember like Greg Jennings and shit did that back in the day. I don't know if they still do that, though. And then a couple other guys. I mean, Caleb Jones, Daniel Whelan, Benny Sapp, Patrick Taylor, Bo Melton. They're all restricted free agents or exclusive rights free agents.
I like Whelan.
I like all those guys. Why not?
I think they're all going to come
Jones,
back.
Caleb Jones, I don't know. You think he comes back?
For sure. I think they'll all come back except for Patrick Taylor. I think he was kind of lucky to come back to the Packers for the second half of the year.
Did you say Jonathan Owens?
I might have crossed him off. I think he's a free agent, though, too. Yeah, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Do we want him back?
No.
Yeah, I don't really. Maybe maybe they will for the clicks and Simone Biles.
Everybody likes him because he's Simone Biles' husband, but if he was married to literally anybody else in the world, well, other than Taylor Swift, I guess. But than that, nobody cares about him. God, I'm sorry. I'm sure he's a great guy.
He had a bad game, too. Remember him trying to tackle Kittle, and he just ran him over and picked up another, like, 15 yards. Just embarrassing. Last thing, draft prospects. You know, we have the 25th, the 41st, the 58th, the 88th, and the 91st pick. So that's one first-round pick, 2 seconds, and 2/3 in the top 100, which is pretty good. We're also going to we'll get a couple of compensatory picks as well. It sounds like we'll get a fifth rounder for Alan Lazard, which is pretty hilarious with him being a healthy scratch a few times. But I don't know if we have to talk about specific prospects here, but what do you guys hope we do in the early rounds of the NFL draft?
I think corner safety and potentially, you know, a mid-round lineman, just depending on what happens. If Runyon walks, I think you got to fill.
Runyon's got to be gone. Yeah.
I think we need to take safety and linebacker relatively high, which worries me because we've historically undervalued both positions. I also think we need to take a running back at some point. I'm not going to say it needs to be day one, day two, but get somebody to play behind Aaron Jones and then maybe take over a year from now.
I think it's the taking multiple late round running back strategy. We have to employ that.
Yep.
Well, they talked about Braylon Allen, the running the old Wisconsin, I should say, old young Wisconsin running back. But there isn't really. I don't think anyone's projected to go in the first or second round from the running back spot this year, which has kind of been the trend outside of last year when Gibbs and Robinson went that early. But
I'm a Wisconsin guy. I love Wisconsin football. I love Braylon Allen. I do not want him on the Green Bay Packers because he just, he looks like another AJ Dillon to me. Like, sure, he can run away from college guys, but get him into the pros, and all of a sudden he's not running over guys anymore, and he's not running away from them.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, the guy I want is Tyler Newbin. I think we talked about that in the past, the Gopher safety, just because we sent him a Christmas card this year, so I'm hoping we could maybe get him on the podcast. I mean, it's crazy too because
did you put a request on the Christmas card?
Nah, that'd be too much. We have my dog Yellow's paw on it with like dirt or some shit. I think
I'm disappointed I didn't get a Christmas card, Spencer.
We only sent out a handful of them. There was also the Alabama slot corner Terrion Arnold. He was like the highest graded run stuffing corner in college football last year, and he plays with that tenacity. So something like that I would love on defense, especially with hopefully replacing Keyshawn in that spot.
I was watching some highlights and doing some mocks last night with a buddy of mine, and we watched Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky.
Cool name.
He is electric. He's like a little bit smaller version of Debo. So that is like on my wish list. And then there's a dude from USC who plays safety, Callum Bullock. Dude, those two guys. Those are on my Christmas wish list.
Okay.
For the draft.
I would assume we're going to take a safety fairly early, at least with one of those top 3-5 picks, I'd say, because that's, once again, pretty valuable in Jeff's. I like saying Jeff because I keep Halfley. It's like a new last name. Like every
Halfley. It's so hard to remember.
Every few weeks or months, you know, you come across a new last name you've never heard before. Halfley, ain't never heard that before. But again, with that single high shit, you would think you'd want to have a pretty, I don't know, explosive safety. So.
It feels like another defensive heavy draft early,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, which isn't very reassuring because, boy, we've had way too many of those in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, we'll see. And Goody today in the presser didn't say he's going to change his philosophy, but he said a new DC isn't going to change the way that he's going to draft too much. And again, didn't really say much of anything in his presser. The only thing, and I quote tweeted it, he said, they thought about replacing Anders, but when they looked out at all the veterans that are out there, he was the best of who was available. It's like, Goody, you can find a better way to answer that question than to say he was the best option. Like, fuck off with that shit. Again, I know the Mason Crosby stuff we've talked about a little bit too, but we would have felt a hell of a lot better with Mason Crosby trotting out there to make a, 39? How long was the field goal? 39-yard field goal?
Ugh, not even worth talking about.
I thought it was longer than that, but still.
But that's the season. That's all we got. Nice little shorter podcast here, I believe. We'll see how it ends up. But God, this is the 5th season of doing the podcast, which is pretty fucking wild. I think we're up to 130 episodes. And again, thanks for listening. You know, I say it every year. It's pretty cool how, you know, I was like a fucking kid being 14 years old going to Lambo trying to get autographs, and now we've got people who tune in every week and listen to me and a couple buddies talk about the Packers. This year, you know, I mean, downloads have been fine and all of that, but it's cool because with more of the analytics, and for an hour and a half long podcast, our average listen is like 85-90%, probably way too in the weeds here, but for people to listen to, you know, as we always say, a few idiots talk about the Packers is pretty cool, so I'm very happy that everyone tunes in every week and listens to the pod.
Maybe to entice the 15% that don't listen all the way through?
They're already gone.
Dang it.
We're in the last 15.
Shit. Okay. Well, there's bonus audio
yes.
at the end sometimes.
Yes.
That I enjoy, so maybe you will too.
Yeah, sometimes we talk about sausages. This time it's probably gonna be the zoo talk that we had between
why not?
There. But only other thing. Oh, shout out to Jake who emailed in. He told us to, or asked, not exactly politely, but he's in a band called Turbo Pastel, which is a local band here in the cities. And, you know, you get that email, you know, he said, you know, and he actually emailed a few years ago and asked for a koozie, sent it to him. And he's like, hey, you should put my band in the outro. I'm like, I don't know. And then I listened to it, and I'm like, oh, fuck, you guys are actually pretty good. And he actually... I know you guys don't know who Eric Koskinen is, who's, you know, a local alternative country artist, and he plays guitar for Dead Man Winter, which is the side project for David Simonette.
This is why people aren't listening all the way through.
The lead guy for Trampled by Turtle is his side project. He plays guitar for him, Eric Koskinen. But he did talk to Eric Koskinen about the podcast, apparently, and brought it up. I didn't get any more information out of him on it, but he did say that Eric is a Packers fan, which I did not know.
So we're not getting sued by Eric
Koskinen.
What if
he's a listener?
I highly doubt that. I'm kind of pissed because I think I was in Mexico when Dead Man Winter played at First Ave last week, because eventually I'm going to run into him and bring it up. Like, I talked to him once at the Turf Club after nobody cares about this shit, but yeah, that's the season. You guys have anything else? We'll be sporadic here on out, and we'll probably have a couple other guys coming in and out just with draft stuff. I'm hoping to get Jake Shavink back on too for the draft. To you can follow him on Twitter. He does some great stuff on YouTube as well. But yeah, you guys have anything else before we close out for the season? We'll probably maybe bi-weekly, every couple weeks. I don't know. If news pops up, we'll talk about the Packers. So you guys got anything else?
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. Really exciting season ahead.
It was a 41-yard field goal by Anders. I had to fact check.
Okay, okay.
Go Pack, go.
All right, and with that, Eric Koskinen, please don't sue us. Anywhere I quit my job. Yeah, cause it just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month. Then they took my money away. Yeah, well, now I don't care. Cause they ain't working like me down here. I said, hey now.
I went to the zoo down in Brownsville, Texas, right next to Mexico.
Ooh, how was that? What was the most exotic animal?
Rhinos.
Oh, rhinos are the best.
Rhinos are the best. And so we went there on a Monday. The animals were super active. Maybe because it was morning, I'm not sure, and it was a little bit cooler.
No, they were just relaxed from the weekend.
Yeah, the weekend sounds super relaxing at the zoo. Everything was moving. The reptiles were all moving. You know when you go in there and like not a single thing, you're like, these could all be dead.
The boa constrictor is always just in a ball.
The reticulated python, or reticulated, I think.
That's a giraffe, dude. Yeah.
I'm not a snake guy.
Whatever the big boa constrictor looking thing is, I think it's reticulated, but there is a reticulated giraffe also.
Yeah, that's what I'm...